I'm Rich Egger, and this is Emphasis. Today's guest is James Banks. He was the keynote speaker for this week's Dealing with Difference Institute at Western Illinois University. Most of his time is spent as director of the Center for Multicultural Education at the University of Washington, Seattle. Can you tell us a bit about the center?
Yeah, it was founded in 1992, about 20 years ago, and it was really a center designed to bring together work that we'd been going on for a while in terms of dealing with primarily with race and education and ethnic group and immigration, and how do you help teachers deal with these issues. But our focus is primarily courses and research and publications, and also we do some in-service training with teachers.
Yeah, how do you help teachers present this sort of information in a classroom?
Well, we first of all helped them get the knowledge. In my speech today, I talked about we needed to teach students to know, to care, and to act. And we found out that if teachers are going to help students know, care, and to act, that they need to know, care, and act. And an example, we try to help teachers rethink American history. For example, the Westward Movement, we helped them understand it wasn't westward for the Indians, for the Lakota Sioux, because it was the center of the universe. That was their home. It wasn't west for the Alaskans, it was south. And it wasn't west for the Mexicans, it was north. And it wasn't west for the Japanese, it was east. So we try to help them understand new views of America and how it developed. We helped them understand that it wasn't just linear with the Anglo immigrants moving from the east to the west, but it was multidimensional. And we try to help them understand, for example, the notion of what is the meaning of terms like discovery, that how can you discover a place where people are already living? For example, we give them the example of Dick Gregory joke that a person went out to the parking lot to get their car and found out it had been discovered. So we asked teachers, how would you feel if you go to the parking lot and your car has been discovered? So that we're trying to help them rethink America. So that's a lot of our work in the center is designed on helping teachers think about America and indeed think about the world differently.
So is that what multicultural education means to you? Is it a sort of a way of looking at things from a different perspective?
That's one of the things. That's an important thing it means. That's only one dimension. I talk about the five dimensions of multicultural education, one of the important ones is what I call knowledge transformation. But another very important one, I'll talk about two more of my five dimensions. Another one is really looking at equity pedagogy. And by that, some people call culturally relevant teaching, using teaching strategies that will enable African-American kids, that will enable women. We know that from some research that often females and African-Americans and Mexican-Americans, that the teaching style needs to be different because these groups tend to be what researchers call more culturally sensitive than culturally independent. In other words, they tend to do better with group work as opposed to autonomous kind of learning. So that the equity pedagogy or the culturally responsive teaching really involves changing your teaching strategies so that diverse groups can learn more effectively. So that's another dimension. A third dimension is of the five dimensions I talk about is really reducing prejudice and enabling kids from different groups kids come to school, by the way, research is pretty clear on this, with very negative attitudes toward other ethnic groups. I don't know if you saw the Anderson Cooper series of specials on the racial attitude of preschool children, and it was pretty dramatic, and some of the parents were embarrassed as their young children express prejudice, primarily white kids, but some of the black kids too, express negative attitudes toward their own group. So that part of another major goal of multicultural education is to help kids feel more positively toward other groups, develop more positive racial attitudes, and also to relate more positively to other groups. So that's three of the five dimensions I talk about. I won't talk about the others because of time, but it's a multidimensional conceptualization, not just one notion.
That negative attitude toward other groups, does that come from home? Does that come from the culture, from seeing it on television? Where are these preschoolers or, you know, young children getting this from?
You know, that's an excellent question, because for years we thought that they just got it directly from parents. Now we know from the research by Abood in Canada that sometimes the attitudes of the kids that are expressed are much more negative than the parents, and that what we now know is that it's a combination of forces. The media is a major one, where kids pick up, if you think, what is the image of black women in movies, particularly old movies, or of black men, or blacks in general, they're pretty negative. So kids pick these up from media, from classmates, from the society writ large, and from many different sources, we now know. And what we now know, if the school doesn't intervene to help kids get more positive racial attitudes, which we need to do, the younger they are, the easier that is, that becomes increasingly difficult as kids grow older. But the Anderson Cooper special is very dramatic in showing, and I show part of that footage to my students in my methods class, and they're just kind of stunned. This research goes back to the Kenneth and Mamie Clark doll studies in the 1930s. So it's been a long, but it's just been replicated and by Anderson Cooper and Margaret Bill Spencer, the University of Chicago. She was his chief consultant. Kind of sobering videotapes.
This idea of multicultural education, how long has that been around? How did that get started?
Well, that's a very good question, and we could go back. My wife, Cherry Banks, has written a book on the history of the intergroup education movement, which, of course, goes back to the 20s. So it has been a continuous movement. And then in the 20s, we had the intercultural intergroup education movement, 20s and 30s, with Hilda Taba and others. And then we, of course, had black studies with Carter G. Woodson, W.E.B. Du Bois, then we had ethnic studies in the 60s. Multicultural education really grew out of that. I mean, looking at it historically. So multicultural education was kind of the school version of black and Chicano ethnic studies that, of course, that had been around since the 30s and 40s, because Du Bois' work, as you know, was done around the turn of the century, and Carter G. Woodson's work in the 30s. So that multicultural education was a modern evolution of that work that Williams constructed probably in the 70s. But it came directly out of black ethnic studies and other ethnic studies. So it didn't just one morning pop up. It evolved historically.
How has the field evolved in recent years or recent decades? Is it still evolving and changing?
Still evolving, complex and changing. And it's cyclic. I mean, we make progress and we have regression because it's a complex process. The latest part of the field, again reflecting my own biography, is really it's becoming very internationalized. My latest work focuses on looking at multicultural education around the world, and one of my latest books, The Routledge International Companion on Multicultural Education, looks at multicultural education in many nations. And I just got back from South Korea lecturing on this issue and looking at multicultural education. The conference focused on multicultural education in South Korea and other nations. So the latest manifestation is the global dimension.
Would you say multicultural education is practical, you know, in the same way that somebody studying nursing or business, you know, they talk about those being practical degrees, I guess. Do you feel the same way about multicultural education?
Well, it has a practical aspect because we have teachers in school dealing with kids from, in Seattle, about 50 different ethnic groups and cultural groups. So it's practical in the sense of how do you help teachers deal with this diversity? By the way, most of our teachers are white and female and monolingual, and yet they're dealing with this incredible diversity. So it's really not only practical, but it's pragmatic. How do you help teachers deal with this enormous diversity? And, of course, there's a tremendous achievement gap between Asian Americans, white Americans, and who are achieving fairly well, and blacks and Latinos and many other ethnic groups who are achieving very poorly.
Do you think there's much of an emphasis on multiculturalism in other countries, or is this unique to America?
Oh, no. It's very much international. and just as America, other nations are struggling. For example, in France, the largest growing group is Muslim kids, and the French have banned the wearing of the veil in schools, which has created an enormous problem, because many young Muslim girls who weren't wearing a veil until it was banned, and they said, "You're going to ban my color? Give me a veil." I mean, they weren't necessarily wearing one. That's an example of how the nations are struggling. No, this is a worldwide movement, and in the Netherlands, they've had tremendous dissension over the increasing Muslim population. In England, you have the Indians, the Indians in England are out achieving the whites, just as the Chinese are out achieving the whites in the United States. So it's complicated. It isn't just that all minorities are doing worse. Not at all. It depends on the minority group. But no, this is a worldwide phenomenon. And of course, China has about 54 official ethnic groups. I teach in China every September at Minzu University of China, and they're struggling with how do you help the minorities learn Mandarin and yet maintain some sense of their own culture.
You mentioned some ethnic groups are doing quite well, some not as well.
Exactly.
What's causing that difference?
That's a very different. If I had to quite answer to that, I think I'd brand it and sell it. I think that's a very complicated and difficult question. I think a part of it is, let's just take the Chinese. I think if you look at Chinese Americans, I think part of it is the home socialization. The China kid is told that if you don't achieve, you're going to shame my family. And also, not only that, but I know from just being around Chinese Americans, is that often the kid has a tutor and the kid has a... after school, they go to the Chinese school for more teaching. For example, my dean many years ago was Japanese American, and at the University of Washington, and my kids were in school, and one was struggling at the time with math, and he said, "They of course have a tutor, don't they?" I said, "No, they don't." He said, "Of course, your children should have tutors." So we of course got a tutor for our daughter, and she ended up going to Spelman and into Harvard and doing, now she's a college professor. But the thought of the tutor never occurred to me as a black Southerner, but to the Japanese dean, the kid gets the tutor after school. And so I think a lot of it, cultural socialization within home and community. So I think that's a major factor. I also think the Chinese culture is much more consistent with the white mainstream culture than black culture. So I think there are many factors. I think there's much more push for school learning in Chinese culture than in black culture. So I think there's some complicated factors.
Well, it sounds like money might be part of it too. A dean can afford a tutor for a child. That's not everybody can do that.
That's a very good point. You're a very perceptive interviewer. That income becomes a major factor. I could do it because I was a college professor, but many inner city parents wouldn't have the income. So that is a factor. Class is a factor.
James Banks is director of the Center for Multicultural Education at the University of Washington, Seattle. For Tri-States Public Radio News, I'm Rich Egger.